Hi everyone, I'm Lindsay, your usual host, and I'm really excited to welcome you to a new limited series of the Food for the Future podcast called Food is Medicine, featuring diverse guests from five different regions of the world, providing us with some fascinating perspectives on food, nutrition, human rights, and much more. So now I will pass it over to World Food Forum colleague Christina, who will lead us through this fascinating series. Enjoy!
In this episode, we were joined by Maya Mita. Maya is a storyteller, convener, and creative producer. She is a firm believer in the power of the word, and she is a communicator for good. Maya holds a Master of Arts in International Affairs from New York City's The New School, and her practice is rooted in human rights, participatory media, and culture. In addition to the written word and design of engaging content, she is working to create spaces where those present feel a deep sense of belonging, care, and acknowledgement, co-creating an alternative narrative and a future distinct from the past. We dive into the interrelated topics of food waste, healthy diets, and environmental sustainability.
So hello, Maya. Welcome. And would you like to introduce yourself for everyone listening and tell us about your background and how you got where you are today?
Yeah, sure. And thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to share. So my name is Maya Mita, and I'm currently the head of communications at the Social Gastronomy Movement, which we'll speak to more in a bit. But in terms of my background, I am from a very small rural town in Maryland in the United States. But my family, my father's side is from India, so I think at a very young age, I became acutely aware of some of the flaws or imperfections in the way that we are with each other and our social systems. But I think one of the first places I really found a sense of belonging was my first job at 14 years old, working in a restaurant, a pizza shop, actually, where I just really felt this sense of camaraderie, and I enjoyed being in service to others and being in this diverse kind of high energy atmosphere of a restaurant. So anyway, I continued, you know, working in restaurants throughout college where I studied political science. And I was, I think, kind of in this predefined narrative that the only thing I could do with a political science degree was be a lawyer. So I think I realized that that wasn't for me, and I decided to go down a different path. So one person who I've been inspired by my whole life, and I admire, and I still admire his legacy very much, is Anthony Bourdain. And he has this quote, which is, "If you are 22, physically fit, hungry to learn and be better, I urge you to travel as far and widely as possible. Sleep on floors if you have to. Find out how other people live and eat and cook. Learn from them wherever you go." And I took that very literally. I was 22, physically fit, and I packed up my bags and went as far as possible to Fiji, where I lived in a rural indigenous village called Silana. And I fell in love with this kind of very different way of living and being, and kind of being in nature and being with nature and farming. So I continued to work in restaurants, save up money, and then explore different places around the world where I would listen and eat and laugh with people and dance. So eventually that led me to get my master's degree in international affairs at the New School in New York City, where I was exposed to kind of radical educators like Paulo Freire. So I came to Rio, where now I have worked with permaculture and lots of radical human rights education programs. And then eventually the social gastronomy movement came into my life at this perfect time during the start of the pandemic. And I was like, this is the place. This is it. This is what I want to be doing and where I want to be.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. Thank you for sharing, Maya. Now, you've mentioned social gastronomy movement. So please, would you like to tell us more about that? What is your mission and how you actively contribute to transforming our food system?
Sure. So our mission at the Social Gastronomy Movement is pretty straightforward. We engage people in food systems to collaborate for social change. So what that means is basically all transformation starts in relationship, and what we do is we are a global impact network of about 300, a little bit more than 300 change makers from over 65 countries who are representative of different regions, different languages, different sectors, different ages. And we have this recipe called connection, collaboration, and partnerships, which is about basically finding a borderless community where you can find the sense of belonging with others who are working within food systems transformation, collaborate on shared projects and shared initiatives, for example, food waste, and then create partnerships that are really based on trust and on a kind of mutual care and shared vision. So we are a human-centered movement, all focused on really using food as that tool to bring us together, to bridge communities. And during this time where, you know, there's over 800 million people experiencing hunger and COVID, climate emergency, rising food costs, conflict, the four C's, as they call them, are continuing to make the situation just even more of a challenge. So it's more important, I think, now than ever for us to really be working together, exchanging knowledge, best practices, and even replicating models that work within local community. And when we're working in local community, making sure that everyone's at the table when it comes to decision making. So including, of course, like policymakers, but then also youth, Indigenous communities who hold this incredible wisdom, people with lived experience of food insecurity, inequity, and hunger, and farmers, smallholder farmers. So for us, it's really both at that local level, but then also on the global stage, making sure that everyone's at the table and everyone has their voice heard.
What you do is truly amazing and important, and I'm very happy that you're here to share it with us today. Now, you mentioned while talking food waste, and we know that food waste and loss are pressing challenges of our food systems. Can you explain to our public what is the difference between food loss and food waste, and how do we tend to calculate them?
Sure. So food waste is probably the easiest one to start with, especially growing up in the US. It's kind of in your face all the time, whether you're in a university food hall where food's getting thrown away. So basically, food waste is when it's at the consumer end of the supply chain. So it's when your leftovers spoil and you throw it away. It's, you know, what you see in public waste bins in cities. Whereas food loss, on the other hand, normally happens because of some sort of flaw within the infrastructure or the distribution system. So it's the food that never even makes it from the farm to the shelves in the grocery store or to the restaurant. So here in Brazil, for example, food loss is the biggest issue, and sometimes it's caused by inadequate refrigeration, for example, or really long distribution, I guess, distribution-like routes. So it's, if you see like on the map, a lot of in the global south and in the food loss is actually the main problem and not necessarily food waste. Whereas in places like the US and in Europe, usually the issue is food waste. And in terms of the way that that's calculated, I think one thing is measuring that is a business case. So if you are a farmer or if you're a supplier, it's your profit that's also being lost. So I think that that's first and foremost how it's measured. But then, of course, you know, we go into carbon footprint and everything as well.
Thank you for explaining, Maya. And I will now pass the floor to Mario, who will keep asking questions to you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Maya, again, because this sounds so interesting also for us, but for sure also for our audience, providing all these descriptions and also explanation and examples. So in this context, can you explain us why food waste matter and what is the environmental and the climate impact of food waste, of course?
Sure. So, well, I think, you know, one of the most shocking realities is that while we have, you know, over 828 million people going to bed hungry every day, we also grow enough food to feed everyone and more and give people the calories that they need to survive and to thrive. But then at the same time, we allow, instead of that going into bellies, it goes into bins and one third of food is wasted or lost. So actually, another shocking fact is that if food waste was a country, it would be the third largest emitter, just behind the US and China. So every time food and organic matter isn't separated from the rest of trash and it ends up in landfills, it releases methane. So really, I mean, the impact that we could have by reducing food waste is huge. And it would be not only beneficial for society, but also beneficial for our planet.
Thank you. Thank you again to stress this point, this important point. So in your opinion, how we can reduce food waste and promote healthy eating?
Absolutely. And I love this question because I really think that the two go hand in hand. And that might be like a very personal, you know, idea of mine, but I think eating healthy, having a healthy relationship with food, starts with having a healthy relationship with nature. And there's a book I love called Braiding Sweetgrass by an author called Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she speaks a lot about this concept of reciprocity. And for, you know, for those who might not know, reciprocity is an exchange of gifts, essentially. So nature provides us with everything, the food, the life, the energy that we need to survive. And I think if you have a healthy relationship with what you're putting into your body, it comes with also a sense of gratitude of where that is coming from. So the seeds that were planted, the resources that went into growing something, or even if you talk about eating meat, a respect for lives and a respect for living beings. So for me, I think that connection and being reconnected to the source is such an essential element of eating healthy as well. And of course, there's ways to eat healthy where you're still, you know, disconnected a bit. But, you know, if you are going to a farmer's market and buying your vegetables for the next few days, you are so much more connected to that. And I feel then you acknowledge that it's a gift. Like if somebody were to, going back to reciprocity, if somebody were to give you a gift, it's much harder to throw it away. Like you're not going to take a gift that somebody gives you and throw it away. So if you consider that same kind of way of being in relationship to food, then hey, it would be a lot less easy for us, a lot harder for us to just toss something in the trash if we consider everything a gift.
Thank you again, because you are also linking the important concepts and you are providing a comprehensive explanation to our audience. So now we would like to stress something related to the role of households, because there are different investigations and analyses, like one was recently published by the University of Illinois, and according to all these analyses, the households are responsible for the food waste because they are at the end of the supply chain. And for example, customers like normal people, so normally throw away food for various reasons, such as food safety concerns, dessert with fresh food, or for example, poor fraud management. So how can people at home tackle these issues? So in which way we can change also this bad habit?
Absolutely. And I do hesitate to place all of the blame always on the consumer, because I think we tend to do that a lot, especially when we talk about food waste. And I think it's important for people to acknowledge their role in this kind of overall flawed system, like your average household, of course. And I just wish that as a whole, for us, those of us working like in advocating for zero waste, that our narrative is a little less focused on that guilt and is a little bit more focused on possibilities. So that's where I see my role as a storyteller as well. But also, of course, there are many, many ways for us to reduce waste in our own kitchen. So from taking vegetable scraps and freezing them and using them for veggie stock, I've been doing that for the past 3 years and I never buy vegetable stock at the grocery store anymore. So not only is it good for the planet and it's a good habit to get into, but it's also really good for my wallet because I'm not spending so much money as well. So I think that's a great business case even to make to people to reduce waste. But I also think there's something about shifting our awareness and our collective awareness, because there's a wonderful food educator from our movement, Chef Charles Michel. And I was listening to him speak in another podcast with Mark Brand the other day. And he was talking about like artichokes in cauliflower and how, I mean, these plants take so much space. And then all at the end of the day, like what you consider to be edible matter is just the flower. And actually, so much of the plant is edible and can be cooked in a way that it's delicious and it's nutritious. So where we think some plants, we only have like this 5% yield, there might actually be like 40%. And again, I think that comes back to changing our relationship with food as well. And there are other very practical steps to take. Like, I think going to the grocery store less or more often. So instead of going to the grocery store, which is something like in the US, I remember growing up, like my mom would go to the market and buy food for like a week and a half or 2 weeks because it was kind of far. And it's crazy because it was far, but in between the grocery store and my house was just farms. So it's also like this kind of weird paradigm where it's like, okay, you have to travel so far to get food, but there's food growing all around you. But that's another question. And yeah, so I mean, of course, food would go to waste because a lot of food isn't meant to just kind of sit on shelves for weeks at a time. So yeah, I think eating fresh, if you want to eat fresh, like also living in a city, you have a lot of opportunity to just kind of go to the market when you want to cook something and reduce waste that way. And if you are lucky enough to live out in a lot of green space, my biggest recommendation is to grow your own food because, for example, my lettuce used to always go to waste. Actually, I'm guilty. I would buy lettuce and I would not eat enough salad. But now I have a garden and I can just take what I need and the rest is living and alive there in my garden until the next time. So, yeah.
You know, I particularly like when you said the importance of collective awareness, especially for this topic. And I think this concept is also linked with our last question that probably involves many people of our audience, the young people. So we know pretty well that your movement encourages young people to collaborate for social change. So in your opinion, what is the role of youth in tackling the food waste? Also, what could do our audience in the future in order to tackle this important challenge?
Yeah, so I know it's kind of a cliche to say, but really youth are the future. So for every young person who starts changing their habits in the future or in the kitchen, taking, you know, steps to cook zero waste dinners for their family, composting, each young person who does that is a future household that will do that. So I think, you know, starting off with adopting habits that are focused on reducing waste. I mean, once something becomes a habit, it becomes so natural for us to do in the kitchen. But then also youth have this incredible power to mobilize and to organize and to inspire. So it's about engaging your student groups, if you're in school, working with your community because your voice is valued as a young person, especially there are so many incredible movements like ours that are just led. And I mean, World Food Forum that is really spearheaded by young people. And you know, that's like this kind of high level global stage stuff. But then there's also, you know, where really change starts is in your neighborhood, in your community. Organize, share, help spread that kind of collective awareness. Because, yeah, I also think on the flip side, well, we as people who are no longer considered youth, I mean, I just turned 30, so I guess I'm not considered youth anymore. I don't know. I wish. But I mean, I think we need to listen also. And I think that that's something, yeah, that's worth noting is also the role that those of us who are sitting in seats of power right now, the people who are adults need to listen. And yeah, I think also I'm a big believer that the pendulum will swing back. And it wasn't that long ago that waste wasn't happening, like commodification of food and waste wasn't happening at this to this extent. And I think, like, even if I'm in the kitchen with my grandmother, she doesn't waste a thing. And I think especially in Europe, for example, like our grandparents' generation post-war, I mean, they were not wasting food. And yeah, so I think that also that intergenerational learning is really important. So there is an opportunity to learn from elders, and there is an opportunity for elders to learn immensely from youth. So yeah, mobilize, organize, adopt sustainable habits, learn, and that would be my advice.
Thank you so much, Maya. And by the way, you are still considered youth until you're 36.
Oh, yes, that's amazing. I think that just made the rest of my day.
You still have time.
This was truly amazing, really. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. It was absolutely wonderful to be here and to talk to you guys. And thanks for preparing such incredible questions as well. But I also want to extend the sincerest of gratitude to your team at the World Food Forum. You guys have been rock stars in helping us spread the Universal Plate, which is our campaign to serve millions of meals throughout Hunger Action Month this year. Just want to extend my gratitude to everyone. I think you guys are amazing.
Thank you so much.
To learn more about the World Food Forum, please go to world-food-forum.org. You have been listening to the Food for Future podcast. This takeover episode was created and produced by Christina Hagiani, Marta Pace, Valentina Vitale, Giorgio Sonnino, and Mario Gioldi. Additional production support by Lindsay Hook, Doc Ocato, Valentina Carlino, and Hugo Boris.